This is the Welcome to Humanity podcast with thought leader and transformative psychiatrist, Dr. Fred Moss. This show focuses on the betterment of humanity on a global scale. Each episode will leave you enlightened, inspired, and ready to make an impact in your world. Welcome to the show. Welcome to your life. Welcome to humanity. Here's Dr. Fred.
So today is my honor and pleasure to introduce my listeners and his listeners too to a conversation with none other than Michael Gelb. And I want to say a couple words about him. First of all, Michael, you know, your bio just got to me, so I could read it, but I'm actually not going to do that. Instead, what I'm going to do is talk a little bit about, just briefly, about the impact that our encounter has had on who I've become after meeting you. So I met Michael just a few months ago around New Year's as we attended a retreat in the Malibu area. And Michael will talk, I'm sure, a little bit about his passion that is also part of that retreat context. And from the very second that I saw him, and really his sort of his humorist, realist, a brilliant presentation, and somehow couched in just a ridiculous source of humility, there was just something very attractive about how Michael walks through the world. So when listing the people to be on my initial set of podcasts, it was a no-brainer to put Michael Gelb on that list. Here I am interviewing Michael Gelb in my very own podcast, and it is just really with deepest honor. Welcome to the podcast, Michael.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
So Michael, you know, why don't you tell me and the listeners a little bit about, I really get one thing about you, which is sort of, I think when we had that last dinner together in Malibu, that if I ask you what you do, you have about, I don't know, 20 or 30 really real possible directions you could go with that question and have it be like impactful, impressive, or useful. And I am going to ask you that today so you can help us gear this conversation. Like Michael Gelb, what do you do? Who are you in this world?
So I guess I could choose to respond from any one of those 20 or 30 various perspectives rather than attempting to give an overview of all of them, which might take up all the time of our conversation. So
that's the point. It's complex, it's thorough, and it's somehow unified with each other, because after all, they're all you. So which one do you want to pick up, including the overview? Any of them are possibilities, Mike. Hey there, it's Dr. Fred. Before we dive into today's conversation with my good friend Michael Gelb, I just want to take a minute to let you know that I just finished putting together the audiobook version of my soon-to-be-released book called The Creative Eight. This book teaches a surprisingly simple method for healing that utilizes creativity and self-expression as its primary modality. And as a listener to the Welcome to Humanity podcast, I just want to offer you a completely free copy of this audiobook as a thank you for listening to the show. All you need to do to get this copy is go to welcometohumanity.net/creative. I've used this Creative 8 methodology in both psychiatric patients and coaching clients alike for the past several years, and I'm getting fantastic results. The best thing is it takes less than 5 minutes per day to implement, and it really works. No kidding. I know you're going to love it, so go ahead and download the audiobook. You'll find it at welcometohumanity.net/creative. And now let's get back to our conversation with Michael Gelb.
Well, why don't we start with one very simple practical one, because it did create the framework, the context for our meeting. One of the roles I play is as a teacher of the Alexander Technique. It's what I first really focused on doing as a profession. I trained for 3 years as a teacher of the Alexander Technique in London, from 1975 to 78. And of course, around the same time, I was also working on my skills as a juggler. And I applied the Alexander Technique to improve my juggling ability. And that led me to appearances with the Rolling Stones and Bob Dylan, and to years later writing a book called Lessons from the Art of Juggling, as well as my first book, Body Learning, An Introduction to the Alexander Technique. So what ties that all together is a lifelong interest in how to learn, how to have fun.
Yeah, I guess so.
And the exploration of the nature of the self, the mind, the body, the emotions, the spirit, and how all that fits together.
So, Michael, you have effectively hit on about 12 of those 20 or 30 in your last like few sentences to describe who you are. And there's so many different places that I know my listeners and certainly me could go down in exploration. You know, like for me, it's really, really like compelling to head down the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan line. Or there's this idea of, wait a minute, Michael, juggling and Alexander technique? Or there's like, oh, most of my listeners, you and I know, probably either don't really know what the Alexander technique is or have a notion of it that may or may not be as, I mean, why would a man like you, a man who is so, you know, who is so, what, global or at least has explored so many parts of life, how is it that the Alexander technique, of all things, stays on the front edge of who you are? What is that?
Yeah, well, it's wonderful that one can study something and continue to have the experience of beginner's mind more than 40 years after beginning that study. And that's the nature of disciplines like the Alexander technique or any one of the great traditions of meditation or martial arts, which I've also studied quite intensively over the years, or any of the arts, music, dancing, poetry, writing. These are endless sources of exploration, learning, and discovery. Alexander, the art that he developed, was the art of integrating, coordinating. He called it the use of the self, the mind, the body, the emotions, to work in harmony. And that was something that I was fascinated by, just for general philosophical reasons, but also personally, I was interested, always interested in how to have that sense of feeling connected and whole and balanced in myself. And what was so wonderful about my very first experience of the Alexander technique, a teacher worked with me and I felt my usual sense of self, which was identified with a series of tensions, disappear. Mm-hmm. I experienced a sense of freedom in that disappearance of habit, tension, ways of just automatically thinking and responding. And I just thought that's the absolute coolest experience I've ever had. And it remains that experience. Fortunately, what is it to become a teacher of the Alexander technique? It's how to, I call it making yourself susceptible to grace. Mm-hmm. So that one becomes that much more inviting to what Maslow called peak experiences, what Csikszentmihalyi calls flow. I guess that's another way to think about it. I've always was interested in how does one make, I read Maslow when I was 16 or 17. I thought, well, I don't want to just have one peak experience or two or three in my life. How can we integrate that into daily life? And then Csikszentmihalyi published Flow years later, and it just validated and gave a more research basis to everything that I'd been passionate. But yeah, it's actually fun that we took this way into this, because if there's one uniting, integrating word that I could share to express this journey, it would be flow, or it could be grace.
Mm-hmm. So looking at the self with a sort of swimming with a backdrop, with a prevailing context of flow and grace seems like a space that has been extremely attractive for you. And then you find yourself seemingly in many different areas as a leader or as a front edge proponent or teacher, facilitator for others to be able to pick up some aspects of this for ourselves. Is this right? Or how does it land for you that you get to?
Sure. Well, so what I discovered, what I was surprised to discover is one thing to study these things and apply them. But I'd say I was blessed to discover early on that what I loved doing the most was sharing what I learned with other people. And then it was even more amazing when I discovered that companies would pay me a ton of money to do that. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, you thought you would be able to do that like when you weren't working or something. Like maybe in between jobs, you could actually share your life with others. And here you are getting paid a ton of money to actually share what is most most important and brings out your passions the deepest. That's hilarious. So, in the span of what's likely to be a little less than an hour or some 45 minutes worth of conversation, we're not going to be able to touch on the things that are, you know, on all the things that are critical to you. And you've touched on already just little leaders of many of them. And Alexander Technique, at least being the one that contemporarily appears to encompass much of who you're about. Is it true that like juggling predated Alexander? Is that right for you?
I learned to juggle right at the same time I had my first Alexander Technique lessons. And it was while I was doing an intensive study of the world's spiritual traditions and the integration of those traditions, not just in a theoretical, but in a very practical way. So I spent a year studying with a spiritual genius named J.G. Bennett in England. And Mr. Bennett created the option for those of us on this. It was called the International Academy for Continuous Education. Mm-hmm. I was one of the youngest people there.
Of course.
We spent almost a year. And it was marvelous because we learned so many really practical things. I learned how to cook for 120 people, learned how to take care of sheep. We sheared sheep. We took the wool and we learned how to spin the wool. Stuff that I never would have even imagined doing. We pulled the mud out of river, the bottom of a river, and turned that into clay pots.
Wow.
Yeah, stuff that just gave me a grounding, a sense of, you know, this was a spiritual endeavor, but it was very grounded. It was very practical. And that was a wonderful initiation into life. I was 20 years old. And then we would study the teachings of the world's great traditions. And Mr. Bennett had, you know, before it was a cartoon in the New Yorker, He went to the Himalayas, climbed some mountain, and met a guru and talked to him in Hindi or Pali or Urdu or Sanskrit, because he was fluent in all of those. And he brought back that teaching. He brought back the teaching of Sufi masters that he worked with when he lived in Turkey as the British consul. He was an extraordinary polymath. He was a mathematician, an engineer, a scientist, and a person of integrity, I'm delighted to say. He's somebody who used his powers very responsibly, and I was very blessed to have the opportunity to study with him. And he made it possible for those of us who are interested to have lessons in the Alexander Technique. And when I had that very first lesson, and I had that sense of freedom, I said, oh, this is a way of this is a path to take these universal teachings, the perennial philosophy, as Aldous Huxley called it, and apply it in a framework of integrating and healing oneself and helping others find integration and healing. So really, even though I've done lots of other things since then, and they're all integrated around that passion, which continues.
That's really, I really truly find that amazing. Let me see if I can unload what part of this is so interesting for me. I have dabbled in a number of different growth and development, spirituality, just dabbling, just really slight dabbling in the, and it, often in between my job as a doctor, I found myself exploring those things. And Alexander Technique for me was one of a few things that I tripped into or was led to or agreed to try or, you know, give it a go. And, you know, I have it as, you know, sort of like, oh yeah, I like, you know, one who explores philosophies or explores religions. Like I've had tastes of multiple, I don't know which one is more important than the other. I've had multiple different flavors of this type of category. And the Alexander Technique, until I got to this retreat in Malibu, really, was one of many sort of significantly powerful, impactful tools to make my life more worthwhile than it would be without it. Something like that.
Ooh, yeah.
I really do get sort of a bird's eye glimpse of what, having had just a couple conversations with you, of all the many, 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 many things that you have been lucky enough, fortunate enough, founder, you know, people you've met, things that you've explored, things that you've studied extensively, places that you've lived, partners that you've had, you know, projects that you've created, books that you've written, talks that you've given, courses that you designed and then created and then implemented super successfully, all of those things, Michael. Really, serious? Did I say anything that wasn't true, Michael? No. Okay. So, in the face of all of that, the idea that the thread that comes out the high end is Alexander Technique is like stunning. It's a stunning truth for me. Like, holy cow. It lasted through. It not only lasted through, it grew in its own right as being sourceful for you as you even take on today.
It's yes.
Extraordinary.
That's true. And it's partly because Alexander was a genius. He was a true genius. And what he did, first of all, it's not like anything else. It's unique, and as you know, until you really experience a lesson from a skilled, well-trained Alexander Technique teacher, it remains somewhat theoretical. It's wonderful to read about it. I wrote my master's thesis about it, and that it got published as my first book, and really I was motivated to write the thesis and then turn it into a book because it's the book I wish I had when I was asking people, what is this? Mm-hmm. And that didn't exist. So that's what led to writing Body Learning. Mm. And what Alexander was able to do has become more and more apparent to me is in all my other studies, mostly of Eastern disciplines. So for many years, I trained and taught the martial art of Aikido. And I've also trained and taught and still teach Qigong and Tai Chi or Taiji. And the essential wisdom of these extraordinary disciplines is all there in the Alexander Technique.
That's amazing.
Moreover, what was really fascinating for me when I was particularly passionate student of Aikido and I made a goal to get my black belt very quickly, what turned out to be faster than anybody in the history of my school. And you're not supposed to want to do that. You're supposed to not be attached to it, but I was.
Thanks for coming clean. Right.
and I actually did it anyway, even though you weren't supposed to be able to allow me to do it. I just did it anyway. And
oh my goodness.
But the secret was, it was just applying the Alexander Technique while people were trying to hit me.
Interesting.
And it's the same it's how I accelerated my ability to learn and teach Qigong and Taiji. And now I co-teach with extraordinary masters of those disciplines. And I bring, so what it is Alexander, when I think about it, it was a Western scientifically derived, not science in some university laboratory, but in the laboratory of life and trying to solve a real problem, the kind of patient, careful, thoughtful, scientific observation, in this case, applied to oneself, allowed Alexander to discover in a very down-to-earth way the practical principles that allow us to optimize our performance, to experience flow, to transform stress. And that's why it's taught to this day at the Juilliard School, the Royal Academy of Music and Drama, because people who earn their living by performing in a, especially performing something that is being, while it's amazing what the criticism that musicians, that singers, that actors live with, because you're up there on stage. If you're a singer, my wife's a phenomenal mezzo soprano.
She sure is.
But she knows that every note she sings in public is being looked at through a very critical lens. And her job is to get herself out of the way and let Mozart come through, or let Bach come through, or let Gershwin come through. And that's what happens. So, I met her because when she was at Juilliard, she was studying the Alexander technique. It's part of the curriculum. And her teacher, her Alexander technique teacher, gave her a copy of Body Learning. And she came on the seminar where we met 15 years ago, actually 16 years ago now. And so that's how we wound up meeting. And basically, we've pretty much been together ever since.
Awesome. That's just terrific. And I was, as you know, I was fortunate enough to meet her with you on that weekend. She's completely lovely and graceful and supremely talented with a voice that, you know, rocks the world. So it's makes a lot of sense to see how the two of you are dancing together. So thanks for that as well. You've touched on it a couple times, so I've been tallying. So let's talk a little bit about body learning. Tell us a little bit about how this thing, this body learning, how it's unfolded and the impact that you know, even as its writer, its creator might see that it's had on the world around you. Not to mention, of course, areas of the world that are affected by that book or that way of thinking that you don't even know about as the writer because you're just too many ripples away from it. Tell us a little bit about what body learning is and how that's developed for you since you've written it, as well as for us, the people around you who have read and gained from reading that book.
Sure. Well, what might be most helpful for people is for me to talk about the actual process of writing it, because that was another remarkable blessing. I was training as an Alexander Technique teacher. This is 1975, and I had signed up to become part of a master's program with Goddard College. And the great thing about Goddard is they encouraged us to design our own curriculum and come up with our own ideas. Genuine encouragement for creative, original thinking. So I was passionate about the Alexander technique. Obviously, I was training full-time to teach it, 3-year training program. But when it came time to start writing my thesis, I didn't really know how to write. I'd gotten through college with a double major in psychology and philosophy. I finished in 3 years with honors. But I did that mostly by feeding back to my professors what they taught us in the class, which really didn't require all that much originality. And yeah, that's why I was partly
this tendency to accelerate ahead of others and just kind of do what needs to be done to get done with things with even greater velocity. It appears that that's one of your tricks of the trade here.
Could be. Now that you mentioned it, I suppose that my mother would probably agree with you since.
All right. Well, back to body. Now that we've identified a core personality trait.
Yes, definitely. So right around this time that I was struggling with the master's thesis, a fellow named Tony Buzan came to our Alexander Technique Training School. And he had published a book called Use Your Head, which focused on how to accelerate learning, improve memory, speed reading. He's the gentleman who originated mind mapping. Hmm. And he shared all this with us because he himself was having Alexander Technique lessons. So I went to the head of the Alexander Technique School and I said, that guy was brilliant. What a genius. I want to learn more about his work. And the head of the school said, well, Tony said to me, who's that young American who's asking all those questions? Mm-hmm. I want to meet him. I want to get to know him. So Tony and I started to collaborate. And the first thing, he taught me mind mapping and speed reading and memory, and it transformed everything. I made a mind map of the thesis. My ideas took off in every direction. Then I organized them. And I was blessed to discover this simple, profound secret of creative expression, to generate first and then organize, instead of trying to organize everything prematurely. Mm-hmm. So it was a tremendously liberating experience. And I wrote the thesis out longhand. That's just what ancient history this is. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine typed it up, sent it in to my thesis advisor, who said, I've never seen a student's writing improve so much in the course of my academic career. He said, it's as though you found your true voice. Mm. And I was blessed to do that through learning mind mapping and the other disciplines that Tony taught. And fortunately, Tony liked my approach to teaching the Alexander Technique. So I worked with him. I became his Alexander Technique teacher and also his juggling and martial arts instructor. And that led us to begin to work together. We designed a 5-day seminar called the Mind and Body Seminar. This is in the late 1970s. And he had all these connections with these business people. And I found myself doing corporate seminars for C-level executives from multinationals all over the world. Mm. Meantime, as a result of learning mind mapping and applying it to the project, to the thesis, which became the book, and discovering my voice, I realized that I could write. So that, I said, why not do that again? So that's led to all these other books.
Interesting. Thank you for the process of what it took to write the book. And now, for those who would just pick up the book and not know all the backstory of the author's own development while writing or even in preparation for writing the book that you just described, what is it about the content or the context of the book that you would like to bring forward to my listeners?
Thank you for asking that. I'll tell you, because I'm working on creating an e-version of the book to make it more accessible, because fortunately I actually own the e-rights, because we signed the contract so long ago, there was no such thing as e-rights.
That's right.
But in doing that, even though I want to update it, I want to let people know all the research that's taken place in the 42 years since I actually wrote the original draft of the book. And I want to, for example, help people learn more about how to learn it remotely, because there are a lot of lessons going on Zoom.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Teachers have to get more skilled in teaching without actually using the wonderful touch, which is the most unique and magical thing about Alexander's work. I don't think that'll ever be replaced, even with super virtual reality technology that's soon to be available to all of us. But my answer to your question is that I'm leaving the original text the same. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that it expresses an earnestness that I had and still have, but it was just a sort of pure quality of earnestness that comes through. So even though I might say some of it differently now, I'm going to leave it the way it was. So what you'll get in body learning is the earnestness of the voice of someone learning. Let's just start with the very first principle of, I call them the operational principles, learning this powerful principle that when you get it, really can change everything. And that is the principle that use affects functioning. Use affects functioning. And the corollary of that is we have a choice of how we use ourselves. Mm-hmm. So remember I said before, Alexander's book, The Use of the Self, we tend to not necessarily think that we have a choice about how we use ourselves, but we do, and it really does affect our functioning on so many levels. Mm. So that's the first principle that we explore in depth in body learning, and there are six others.
Yeah. And I was lucky enough, I should just let my listeners know that that's really where I met you, of course, when you were leading a few of those workshops at the Alexander Technique retreat that we were on together at the end of 2019 into the new year. I am fascinated and somehow reverent, I find myself reverent to this idea of rewriting your own book and choosing not to change the original text. There is something eternal about that decision. Like the words preceded you writing them and are not subject to your editing 40 years later. Perhaps the context that it swims in can be described such that it's more applicable to the present day. For instance, virtual reality touch variants that won't replace the original touch, but will be remarkable in their own right, do not change the core text of what body learning had to say about the masterful work that Alexander put forth.
Well said, well said. And so, yes, I will add a new introduction. I will add sections after the original text. But you're right. For just those reasons, the original will remain pristine.
Great. I'm guessing that Bob Dylan probably wouldn't rewrite Subterranean Homesick Blues. And I'm also guessing that, Mick Jagger's not going to write Under My Thumb in using different words for the times. There's something about those things that, span the tincture of times and are uneditable. And so I appreciate what you're saying. Since we've touched on it a few times, entertain us with a little bit about the interface you had with Mr. Dylan, Mr. Jagger, and what's going on with that.
Sure. Well, I mentioned how I learned to juggle and decided that I would use juggling as a means of testing out the efficacy of the Alexander technique in terms of measuring my ability to learn something challenging. And it worked. I improved my juggling skills dramatically, started to perform at children's parties. I used to work at a club called the Beefeater by the Tower, where I would welcome guests for the evening by juggling as they entered, and I would pretend I was English. I'd make up this very silly English accent. It was mostly Americans coming over, and I would say, "Good evening, lords and ladies. Welcome to the Beefeater by the Tower." And then I'd take them to their place, and I'd say, "Have a great time, folks." Say, "Hey, you're American." I'd be juggling. So that was my actual employment while I was training as an Alexander Technique teacher, mm-hmm. as well as doing children's parties and juggling in Portobello Road. We had an act. We used to juggle on the street. Mm. My buddy, his name was Tim Timberlake. He was the science editor of Reuters at the time, mm-hmm. Southern gentleman. one day we were practicing in Hyde Park on a Sunday, and a fellow approached us and said, I am the tour manager for the Rolling Stones. There's a concert series with a carnival theme. Would you guys like to juggle in Earl's Court tonight with Mick and the Stones? We'll pay you £50.
Wow.
Well, that was an easy, sure.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Let me ask my people about that. I'll get back to you. Yeah, right. I got it.
So there we were. That night we were on stage in front of thousands of screaming fans.
Wow.
And that went well. So we got invited to be part of all of the concerts in London and then the Nebworth Rock Festival with hundreds of thousands of people on a stage shaped like Mick Jagger's mouth. We went out to the tip of the tongue to juggle.
Wow.
In front of a vast ocean of denim and hair.
Wow.
And of course that then led, they needed jugglers for the Dylan tour. So they brought us back for that. And the funny thing is I was more of a Beatles fan than a Stones fan. Mm. And I knew Bob Dylan was a genius, but I could never really understand what he was saying. Right. Right. But I got a few of my friends into those concerts, including Michael Frederick, who you met. Still remains the organizer of the Alexander Technique seminar that we go to every year in Malibu. And Michael is still grateful to me to this day. He said, man, you got me in to see the Stones. You got me in to see Dylan. I'll never forget that.
That's so great. That's so great. So, yeah, I totally get that. This is what tour was that, by the way? What year are we talking about with the carnival theme? Is this like Her Majesty's? What is this?
I have to look it up. It was sometime 76, 77, 78.
That was the year I saw the Stones for the first time, was in 76. So that's interesting. I wonder if I might have seen you. Were you traveling around, touring all over? I saw them.
No, we were just in London. We just did the shows in London and then the Nebworth Festival.
Cool. Very, very cool. All right. Well, let me ask, I have a couple more questions for you that I think will... Let's see how you land on these. Is there, you know, given all the people you've met, and Lord knows you've met a chunk of people on the planet, is there anybody in particular? You've mentioned a few, you know, and I guess you didn't meet Mr. Alexander, but is there anybody who you presently sort of emulate, idolize, use as a role model, a guru? Is there one person or is it just a crew of people that you look up to or become a disciple of or maybe just a student of? Is there one person that when asked this question, you're like, well, I really should say this person's name that comes to mind? It's okay if there isn't, by the way. I'm just curious.
Well, as you are imagining, there are quite a few, but Leonardo da Vinci is one that I've probably spent the most time and energy exploring, understanding, and translating to make his teaching accessible to the world.
And you wrote a book about that, am I right?
It's called How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci, 7 Steps to Genius Every Day. And then I wrote the How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci workbook. I wrote Da Vinci Decoded, Discovering the Spiritual Secrets of Leonardo's 7 Principles. I made an audio program called Work Like Da Vinci. I made a musical album about the Da Vinci Principles. So yeah, I've gotten into it.
Is that your most recent work, Michael? Is that what you're, are you always unfolding that? Or is this complete or incomplete? Are you in process? Is there something, what can you tell my listeners about where you are with all that?
Well, How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci came out in 1998. It remains my biggest global bestseller. Thank you, Leonardo. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a video program now to bring the teachings to life in that medium. We're going to release it soon. Mm-hmm. Soon, maybe May, June. Just doing the final edits and the last little bit of shooting. So it's my most, it's probably the work that I've done thus far that's touched most people. It's in 25 languages. Mm. And the reason is, you know, Leonardo's an archetypal figure. He's the uomo universale, the universal human. He's a global archetype of human power and potentiality. And he wrote all these notebooks. So what I did was ask the question, what's he trying to teach us? And then I translated it into contemporary terms and made it accessible and practical so that people get a feeling that they can have Leonardo da Vinci as their mentor.
That's great. I want to ask about a place here, the quiet space. I want to ask if you can speak to this. I imagine a very quiet space of translating Da Vinci's, you know, obscure, undiscovered notebook writings inside of the context of what is he trying to teach, using all the principles from martial arts and Alexander and growth and development, like whatever it is, when you open up that next page and actually learn what it is that Leonardo was trying to teach personally now, before translating it for all of us, before using your superpower to bring it to the world around you, I really would love to know the experience of the discovery of Michael Gelb upon getting something intricately, you know, hidden in the writings, or maybe not necessarily hidden, but not yet discovered. What is that?
Well, I love that question. And there are a number of ways we can approach it. Part of it is that my grandmother was Italian. She was a painter. And she's the one who told me about Leonardo. So I had this childhood sense of this remarkable character. And like most kids, I also was fascinated by superheroes, Superman, and so on. But as I got older, I realized Leonardo was real. So I always had a deep sense of connessione with the maestro. There's a very practical side to how I began really immersing myself in this project. I told you about the seminars that Tony Buzan and I evolved. Mm-hmm. One of the big focuses of those seminars was creativity. So it's quite natural. Both Tony and I would refer to Leonardo's notebooks. We'd talk about his inventions. We'd talk about his art. And we told some stories, which always seemed to be well received by our clients. So at a certain point, I was speaking to a global business group in Washington, D.C. They're called YPO, Young Presidents Organization. Very demanding group of company presidents, but great energy. And I knew that they were holding one of their premier events in Florence, Italia, my favorite city. And I really wanted to get invited. So when I finished my remarks on creativity and innovation to the group in Washington, D.C., I had already imagined that I might be approached by the education chairperson for Florence, and that he might ask me something like, if we were to invite you to Florence, what would you do? And I figured he'd say something like, we want something really special because everybody wants to go to Florence. Right. So I kind of spontaneously made up this idea how to think like Leonardo da Vinci to get invited to Florence.
Oh, wow.
And the guy said to me, can you really do that? And I said, sure. And that, it was one of these things. How was I going to do it?
You're right. Mm-hmm.
And go deliver it in front of this demanding group of company presidents who would chew you up and spit you out in 2 seconds if there's not real depth to what you have to say. But it was great because my grandma seeded my soul with this, and it was part of my destiny to go on this journey, which I literally did. I went to Leonardo's birthplace, the place he died. I walked his footsteps. I reread the notebooks. I met the Da Vinci scholars. I meditated in front of his works. I started dreaming about him. And from those dreams, the principles emerged. and the book flowed forth. So have you ever met Jean Houston? Do you know Jean? She's an anthropologist who was a primary student of Margaret Mead. Mm-hmm. So Jean traveled the world with Margaret Mead, and she didn't just study various cultures academically. She became initiated as a shaman in many of the world's cultures. And she's a remarkably powerful, transformational genius character and author. And I've been lucky to know her for many, many years. So the funny thing is, right in the spring after the Da Vinci book came out, it came out in the August of 1998, and that spring, Jean and I were together speaking to a group of therapists, actually the Family Therapy Networker Annual Conference in Washington, D.C. Jean and I were two of the keynotes. So I hadn't seen Jean at that point for quite a while, maybe about 10, 12 years. So she's known as a gifted shaman, as well as a great scholar and amazing speaker. I hadn't seen her, but she kind of stole up behind me and whispered in my ear, and she said, "Leonardo is very pleased with you."
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. That is great. Oh my God. I love that story. Wow. Awesome. You know, I think you might not know this, but our listeners now do, is that in that story, in that recollection of how you created this, the interfacing of your created future, not yet realized, in fact, no idea how it's going to happen, in the backdrop of the YPO, you know, ready to burn you at the cross, and then having your grandmother having seated you with all of your hopes and dreams, as well as the reality of this Leonardo character, even in the face of Clark Kent and Adam West. Like, you really get that there was an extreme urgency for you to create something that has not ever been done, and following through on those dreams to the point of getting the confirmation from Jean Houston. And, you know, there's just something about, now we see how Michael operates. Now there's something even us normal humans, Michael, can see how you operate. And I don't know if you might not know that it's likely a little bit of a pattern, a prototypical pattern of how you create from nothing and then deliver that to the world around you so gracefully. So thank you for being you, and thank you for getting that done.
Well, I think that's accessible to everybody, and that's part of the point. That's part of my mission, is to help people realize how they can connect with that unlimited source of creative power and then translate it through their own special gifts and talents and aptitudes.
Awesome. Just great. Super cool. Okay. Let's see. We could go on and on, and maybe we should, in fact, schedule another conversation in the near future. But I think at this point, Michael, there's going to be a lot of people who listen to this, probably everyone who listens to this, who's at least interested in keeping an eye out on you, or keeping, you know, learning from you, or learning with you, or watching you, or learning about you, or like knowing a little bit about what you stand for, or maybe the things that you stand for that they now want to learn about, those kinds of things. So if someone wanted to contact you, or someone wanted to get in touch, or at least be able to follow you, do you have any ideas for us on how we would proceed in that direction?
Sure. So first, michaelgelb.com, G-E-L-B, michaelgelb.com. If people go to michaelgelb.com, sign up for our free newsletter, and we'll keep you apprised of where I'll be and how to come and study if you want to join in on one of the seminars, the public offerings. We send those out about once a month or so, and we usually include some sort of inspiring article. The most recent blog article that we sent out with Michael Gelb Medium.com was on Leonardo da Vinci's advice for dealing with a pandemic.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, which he lived through multiple times.
And much more severe
than anything we're going through. And part of why the Renaissance happened was Italy's response to the Black Death. So we're helping inspiring others to get through this difficult time.
And Italy, and you know, after all, Italy being on the front edge of this particular pandemic experience as well. Fascinating.
There's a historical trend here, but the Italians, literally, they created the greatest flowering of art, the birth of science, exploration, the very being of Leonardo, Michelangelo, Galileo, Machiavelli, wow, Raphael. This all was because the plague leveled society. It opened people to think in different ways. And there was this amazing flowering of innovation and exploration and the birth of science because people wanted to figure out how to protect themselves. Hmm. So we're already seeing people innovating in response to the pandemic that we're dealing with now. And so the principles of Leonardo, one of the other themes that you've noticed, why do I love the Alexander technique? Why am I as passionate about it now, if not even more so than I was 40 or 45 years ago? Because they're universal principles. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the teaching of Leonardo. And I'll tell you one of my personal mottos, and I'm going to tell you the real motto, and it is, it's either universal truth or it's bullshit. So anyway, so people can go to michaelgeld.com, get the free newsletter. People can also go, I do executive leadership coaching. I work with people one-on-one. And if people are interested in that, they can go to my other website, which is healingleader.com. That's healingleader.com. And on either michaelgeld.com or healingleader.com, they'll see links to connect on LinkedIn and all those other platforms.
Super cool. Awesome. All right. Well, you know, we like to, let's see if this is even timely. I think you might have addressed it, but you know, one of the questions I'd like to ask our guests often near the end is something like, you know, what's going on in the world? Like, what's going on in the world that actually has you disturbed? Like, you know, no kidding, disturbed, concerned, like ready to go up in arms or to create anew or like to address, you know, like really is drawing you forward from your core. If you had to name one thing, I mean, there's some obvious ones, but I wonder if you have one that's uniquely you. And it's okay if you don't, by the way, go ahead and name one of the obvious ones. But is there something out there that's, you know, really tweaks you about how the world is unfolding right now?
Well, I'd say there's always something. There seem to be a number of particularly egregious ones at the moment. They're so obvious, I don't think they need to be named. My focus, though, is to utilize whatever flagrant disregard for the well-being of others. I mean, that's obviously can tweak me more than tweaks me. It outrages me. This outrage. There's always plenty of outrage to go around, even in the most quiescent time. Whatever's going on, there's enough unnecessary suffering that if one focuses on it too much, one will be consumed. So there's our circle of concern. So what you're asking about is what's my circle of concern? And it's pretty obvious. It's probably the same as everybody else. No real different. What my circle of influence is where I use my circle of concern. I note it. I attune to it. Sometimes it gets to me. Absolutely. I lose it. But the idea is how quickly can I get it back? And the it that one is getting back actually never leaves one. And it is that the ground of being, the sense of a timeless inner resource. And all these disciplines, Alexander, Tai Chi, Qigong, walking in nature, so many, listening to music, all ways for me of remembering the self. And the self is not a separate self. it's the self, which is the source, the heart of awareness that is the same for everyone. Mm-hmm. In our stories, in the way we might answer questions, in our styles, in our personality typologies, in our dramas, in our relationships, we're all really different. And vive la différence. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. In the core of our being, we are one consciousness. Mm-hmm. So when times seem particularly tough, it accelerates one's opportunity to learn how to connect with mm-hmm. and abide in the timeless and the unchanging. And when one is connected to that sense, we're always connected to it, but when one is aware of it, mm-hmm. it's not an escape from dealing with the problems and the challenges. It's actually maybe the ultimate, most profound secret of letting higher wisdom and real creativity come through you.
Thank you. Awesome. All right. Well, we've come to an end, I think, of at least this is a good drop-off point, and it's our tapering, I should say. I'm going to think a lot about what this last set of statements you had, and I think I really feel affected, and I'm sure that's shared among the people listening. So thanks again. Who we've had on today is Michael Galvin. Now you can see that describing this man isn't simple. But at some very real level, he is simple. There's something really human and authentic and present in who you are, Michael. There's something that you have that I can only guess that from your perspective, you don't quite know. The level of light that you shine on the people around you that is exquisite and unique and called for and just lovely and attractive. So again, I thank you for being you. And it is with reverence indeed that I feel so fortunate to have had this conversation with you today and then share it with others. What a gift of present day technology that probably wasn't there exactly during Leonardo's time.
Well, he did predict it. He did say that someday we would be able to talk to each other around the globe instantaneously.
That's what's happening right this very second.
Pretty cool.
So thanks for being on. Welcome to humanity. I mean, we have an excellent example of humanity, and I hope this conversation moved you in ways that leaves you more powerful, even more powerful than you were when you arrived to the conversation. There's lots to do. And then there's just this sense of self. There's just this sense of core, the unchanging, the eternal, the things that we can tap into, each and every one of us, because actually we're already there. And I think Michael has helped us really dance around that and point to it during this conversation. I've had just a splendid time talking to you, Michael. Thanks for being on we call it Global Madness podcast still, but it seems to be morphing. Like Global Madness used to be a futuristic idea, but now it's like a has-been yesterday's news idea. So we're changing it to Welcome to Humanity. It's like, oh, darn, it came faster than we thought. So we're going to change it to Welcome to Humanity. So you're in that transition. Welcome, and thank you for being on the call. I look forward to future contacts. As said in January, I just think I think we owe it to each other to keep dancing, keep talking, keep exploring together. It's just lovely. Thanks for being on the call, Mike.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Check you on the next side. Michael Gelb's been on the call, and have a good life. Have a good life. Hope all is going well, because if it isn't, well, you need to just take another look, and it really might be going better than you think. Be good. I love you. Bye for now. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I really hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. You know, one thing I really, really love about my interview with Michael Gelb was just tapping a little bit on what kind of life this guy has lived and who he is now and his commitment to just advancing humanity and his commitment and joyousness in being in the present moment. I really, really hope you enjoyed it half as much as I did. While you were listening, maybe you thought of a person or two that you thought would really benefit from listening to this episode. Go ahead and reach out to them now and invite them to listen and to subscribe to the Welcome to Humanity podcast. And then speaking of subscribing, I'd like to ask you a favor that is maybe a little small in effort, but would have really big ramifications in terms of impact. Could you please take a minute and just hit the subscribe button on your podcast player? For that, you'll get the latest episodes as they become available. And second, if you appreciate what we have here, I mean, if you've enjoyed our conversations, just take about 3 to 5 minutes and leave a nice review on Apple Podcasts. As it turns out, subscribes and reviews are the two major ways we can reach our listeners with the Welcome to Humanity podcast. And if the conversations we're having are contributing to your life in any way, please consider paying it forward by subscribing and leaving a review right now. I and my listeners will be truly grateful for your support. Also, to catch up on any of the past episodes you might have missed, head on over to welcometohumanity.net/podcast. So until next time, this is Dr. Fred, and this has been another wonderful episode of the Welcome to Humanity podcast. Thanks for listening. Have a beautiful day. We'll see you on the next go-around.